the show.
Well, hey everyone, and welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, here for another week. Very excited to be here with you all, and hopefully many of you, many and more even as we speak, are participating in the Boundless Summer Challenge and are enjoying each day's tasks. I know I am, even though some of them are a little bit tricky and writing the notes can be a little bit exhausting because sometimes I don't know what I'm talking about. But I'm doing it. So I'm excited, and I want to start hearing from you all as well as you're proceeding through each day of these tasks. For the month of July, very exciting. Make sure that you're checking out our Facebook page and the blog for more info on the Boundless Summer Challenge. Well, this week's show, we have a question at the end of the show with Candace from a listener who wants to know about basically telling her boyfriend to get a mentor. So not that she's, you know, basically up in his face about it, but really thinking that he needs one. And so Candace weighs in with some great advice on that. And then our culture segment is an interview that I did with Lisa Velthaus. She is the author of Craving Grace, a great story, almost a memoir in a sense of her experience getting to know God's grace in a very tangible way and what brought her to that point. So speaking of grace, we all need it at some point in our lives. We need it for things that we do, things that we don't do, things that we don't know that we don't do. And sometimes life just comes and interrupts our well-laid plans. And nowhere is that more apparent at times than in relationships. And many of us move towards marriage, which Boundless supports. Woohoo! And we do it intentionally, and we think that we're doing it well, and sometimes it doesn't work out. And we even may get to the point of engagement and have that relationship itself not work out. And that's what we're going to talk about today. So let me introduce our roundtable. We have Lindy Havens over there across from me. Lindy, welcome.
Thanks, Lisa.
Great to have you. And we have Charity Richardson. Charity.
Thank you.
Very pleased to have you. And she has a wonderful green top on. I am also wearing green. Oh my goodness. Lindy has some variation of green. Kevin, welcome.
Hello.
You're wearing black.
I am wearing black. Well, this episode, I thought I should wear black.
Really? Okay.
Appropriate.
Hopefully, maybe you should have brought a white shirt to change into at the end of the episode as we inject hope into your life. Maybe. Okay, we'll think about that
for
next time.
We'll think about
that. That's good. That's good. Well, we are talking here as a collective group because on some level, we have all experienced, you all have experienced, I will say, a broken engagement or two or, you know, may be the case. So we're going to talk about that because I think we have heard from people here on the show who have walked through that themselves and or maybe who are in relationships and kind of are wrestling with fears related to that, don't know what that looks like, don't know what ending a relationship looks like when maybe it should end or what does it look like to either end a relationship or fight it through, you know, when should you do that? So I am very privileged to have the three of you here to weigh in and share your stories. So let's go ahead just really quickly and go around the table and just kind of give a little high level brief overview of where you were in this relationship or relationships and kind of what happened and kind of how that brought you right to where you are right now.
I had a very unique situation because my freshman year in college, I went on a mission trip to Argentina, and I met this this girl, and she came up to us and said, you know, hey, you guys are Americans. She was studying English at the time and wanted to learn, and so I was there for a month, and she hung out with us, and we became really good friends, and we kept in touch, and then I had planned to go back down for the whole summer, the next summer. And so we Skyped and we chatted and we emailed and that sort of thing and paid a bunch of money on phone cards and that sort of thing. And we fell in love through that. And so I went back down there. We hung out a lot that summer, realized that we really do care a lot about each other. And so then I came back home. I had two more years of school during my senior year, I went down during Christmas break and asked her to marry me. And so she said yes, which was a plus. Mm-hmm. And I really think from the beginning, though, of the relationship, we had she wasn't a believer whenever I first met her, and she came to Christ throughout the time of our friendship. And I think that perhaps I know that I encouraged her to come to Christ, and I think that that was, I think that was legitimate. But I think for a long time during our relationship, she questioned whether it was real or whether it was because, well, Kevin really, really wants me to be a Christian. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a huge factor. And part of that was my impatience. I was impatient. I knew that I didn't want to date a non-believer, but I really liked this girl. Mm-hmm. And it's one thing to make your list, and then it's another thing to have somebody there who's real and say, well, that thing on the list isn't as important as I thought it was because this person actually likes me and there isn't anybody else. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, it grew. And then I lived down there for a while doing mission work. And then for about 6 months after I graduated, I was like, hey, I'm graduated. This is great. And I became, I was like, well, I'm a man now. And I went down there and figured we're engaged, we should get married, and we started talking about getting married, but then I ran out of money, and so I came back to the U.S., and I think as I was in the U.S., I was working, I had planned to go back down, but I didn't. I got my job here at Focus, and I think we really grew apart, and, we tried to stay in touch, but having lived down there and seeing each other every day really brought us to the point where, being apart for so long wasn't as easy to do as it had been when I was in college. And, that kind of led to the end. She fell, or she grew away from me, and she started to like another guy. Hmm. And so she ended things with me and started things with him for a little bit.
Okay.
So.
All right.
There we go. Hope that wasn't too long.
Charity, give us a little summary of your story.
Sure. I actually have two. My first one was kind of an informal engagement. We started dating when I was in college, and he was actually a brand new Christian when I started to date him. There was a lot of character issues, some maturity issues, and we were together for 2 years, and again, I was kind of the spiritual leader in the relationship. I had been a Christian for about 10 years by that point in time, and so I was the one always trying to get him to read the Bible and do the Bible studies, and I read all the courtship books mm-hmm. in college, so I was trying to make it a courtship. We weren't going to kiss until our wedding day, and again, him in college becoming a new Christian, he did not understand all of my rules and why I wanted to do it this way. He was trying very hard, but it was one of those things where he just didn't understand it. He didn't get it. He hadn't grown in his walk with God. And in all honesty, as I look back now, I don't think he really had God first in his life or really understood what that fully meant at the time. And after we graduated from college, we were both kind of in a situation of we don't know what we're going to do with our lives. And so he started exploring some different options, and he chose to go into the military. And in his basic training, he actually ended up cheating on me. And so he had asked me to marry him before he left for basic training. I didn't have a ring or anything like that. But again, we'd been together for a couple years, and, I kind of had felt like I could keep him close to God, and I was going to be that rescuer savior myself. mm-hmm. And through that process, I ended the relationship at that point in time. I definitely struggled for about 3 or 4 years with God, just at an intense level of thinking I didn't want any kind of relationship until I was ready to be married. So that kind of washed away a lot of my plans at that point in time. And then after the breakup, I went right into youth ministry. And there was a part of me that just felt like I understand hurt. I understand brokenness. I understand pain. I started working with teenagers in a counseling setting. And then I started working in youth ministry and basically fell in love with, helping people that were struggling and hurting the way that I did. And in that process, I ended up meeting a guy 4 years later that was also involved in children's ministry at my church. And we started dating fairly soon. He was very interested in me, and everybody was kind of rooting for us in the church, and we kind of grew in front of an entire church congregation, youth ministry. And when we had started dating, at that point in time, I had made a decision that I wanted to get my master's in counseling. I had been working in a psychiatric hospital for about 4 years, and I wanted to find a college that I could be basically a licensed professional counselor from a Christian school. And there's basically only five that I was willing to go to, and one of them was in Colorado. Mm-hmm. And I was in Kansas City at the time. Mm-hmm. So at that point in time, I decided that I would move to Colorado to get my master's. We had been dating for about a year, and he was completely in support of it. And so I had moved out here, and he asked me to marry him before I left. And he was in seminary to become a youth pastor himself. And as we did the long-distance relationship, him in Kansas City and me in Colorado, we definitely found that it was very difficult to communicate over the phone. We would have fights that we just weren't able to resolve without that face-to-face very easily. And then he started to come out to Colorado to plan a wedding, look for houses. He was willing to move to Colorado after he finished seminary so that I could finish the rest of my counseling degree. And as we started making those major decisions together, we found that we had different ideas, and we just found a lot of clashing as we were trying to make major decisions, primarily about money and where to live and how to raise children. And we just, some of those major issues that we hadn't really talked about when we were dating that came up engagement, we hadn't fully processed through. And in that process, we ended up calling it off. And it was, yeah, again, it was very painful. And, you know, there was definitely some hard times at the end because it was a lot of tension and fighting and wanting each other to see eye to eye, and just had some different theological beliefs that started coming to the surface. And so. Sure.
And how long ago was that now?
That has been 4 years now.
Okay. Wow.
So.
Okay. Lindy, how about you?
Thanks. I think it's kind of, there's a theme a little bit, which is interesting to me, just having met these two. But the long distance aspect, of course, everything, you know, we have our differences with things. But my story is we went through the same art program at my Christian college. So I knew him all 4 years of college on a very casual, you know, in the same illustration classes kind of setting where you can watch each other's lives from a distance. Mm-hmm. Really didn't. I was dating someone pretty seriously through college, and, you know, there wasn't anything there definitely at that time. Broke up from that relationship right before I graduated, was really heartbroken, and then saw him again at a friend's wedding the next March, so close to a year after graduation. And it's one of those things, you know, you always talk about weddings and the danger of weddings, but just really, we ended up being paired together as a bridesmaid and groomsman and got to talk. And it was kind of one of those things where it's like, oh, I expected you to be married by now. Well, you too, you're not. No. And just, you kind of look at each other and you go, I wonder. And just because our backgrounds and different things are similar. And so we actually did start to get in touch quite a bit after the wedding, and just, I don't know if you want to say fell into, or, but, you know, into this relationship with each other again, long distance. I was here in Colorado and he was in Indiana. So we did a lot of the trips back and forth. And I, in retrospect, looking back, I think I was always afraid to bring up hard things because somebody had bought a plane ticket, you know, to go 1,000 miles away, and you had 4 days together, and you were going to spend time with family. You were going to go to the park. You were going to do all of the fun things, you know, that you don't get to do because you're just talking on the phone and you're doing email. And so why would you ruin a trip?
You don't want to spend that whole trip fighting.
Exactly.
You know, it's supposed to be a happy time. We never get to see each other. Yeah.
Sharing doubts or trying to like dig into all of these things that kind of are at the back of your mind. And I found myself just doing this thing where I kept saying, we'll work it out. You know, everything, we'll work this out. These aren't, you know, these are normal things that would come up, and nothing, huge red flags, just the little things. And over time you're like, and you kind of start to have more of those, and I'm putting them in my journal, but am I talking to him about them? No, you know, because we're doing this long distance. And my family was very kind, but they were also like, you know, you guys, just take your time. You know, you're doing this. And I think being out of college there's this sense almost like I missed my chance. You know, I missed my chance. I was at a Christian college, and that's the time when you find your, you know, your husband. And so
tell me about it, Linda.
So here's this man, and he's a man of God. And well, why wouldn't it work out? You know, why wouldn't it be that way? And so basically by that January, the whole New Year's Eve thing, we did get engaged. He was still in Indiana. I was in Colorado. So, but I think that, again, in my mind, it was just that, yeah, we'll make this work. You know, it'll be fine. And so he moved out here a couple months later. And Charity, it's when you're starting to like actually face life together, make decisions, buy a townhouse. He was really struggling with leaving a good job, coming out here, quote unquote, for me, leaving his family, everything behind. You know, I felt like he was, I was like, well, aren't you happy? Like, isn't this, you know, aren't you excited to be here? Isn't this what you wanted? And so then you see how much he's struggling. And anyway, we just, the more time we spent together, the more things unraveled. And you looked at each other and it's like, I don't really know you. I don't know you in the way, like you said, you're starting to talk about things that you should have talked about months and months before you had a ring on your finger. And then it's like 3 months before your wedding, you're, you know, Bath and Beyond, you're supposed to be picking out things for your registry and you're having this meltdown because you're looking at this person like, I don't even know you at all. I don't know if I should marry you. And we're supposed to be picking out, you know, curtains. So there's just all of this mixed in with this engagement, with all of those things crashing in. Basically, his parents came out to help plan the rehearsal and whatnot. And by that point, we were really at a crisis. And so they came out thinking they were helping us plan the wedding. And we actually sat down with his parents, my mom, and just said, we're at a really rough spot. We need some direction. We need some advice. And I think that was actually the point where looking at each other with our families, having that conversation was like, I don't think this is going to happen, you know? And for a while I actually thought, let's just put off the wedding. I think it's just too close. It's coming too soon. I need some breathing room. We need to get to know each other and it'll be okay. But I think that he also recognized, no, actually this isn't going to happen, you know? And so it was, again, really painful. You go through, we had everything. It was 2 months before our wedding, you know? So you've got the decorations, you've got all of that. And sitting down at a restaurant together and basically like a mini divorce, you know, you're going through your finances and going, well, how much did you spend on, you know, the photographer down payment? And how much did I spend on our counseling appointment and all of those things? And you're actually having to divide up your, you know, your finances. And he got a U-Haul and took off for home. And so I think looking back, it was right, but I would say it would have been much better not to have been engaged, to actually have talked through those things and to have made some really honest assessments and decisions prior to engagement, which would have saved a lot of heartache later on.
Yeah. So speaking of heartache, because this is interesting, I have never been engaged, but I was part of a failed proposal, basically, was proposed to and just had to say no, did not know him, was not prepared to get married in any sense. And so I want to go back to that moment of getting engaged. And the one thing that I remember thinking to myself was, oh no, this is not going to be part of my story. And I was so frustrated and angry that now this was part of my story, because I never wanted that to be part of who I was. Yeah. And it is now, you know, and it's there. And, you know, of course, I said that there was no way that could happen. And I was kind of on the we just need more time. We just need to date longer, you know, whatever. And it did eventually fall apart. But where at that moment in time when you realized you were engaged and this was not going to work out, what were just some of the emotions that went through your head, especially looking towards the future and just saying, where do I go from here? Because this is something that I signed up for and now it's not going to happen. And what does that look like for my future?
Well, for me, it's been, now I have the opportunity to learn the things that I should have learned before. A lot of the things that caused my relationship to fall apart was my lack of reliance on God, because I had it all planned out and it's going to happen this way. And fortunately, it didn't happen that way, because then I would be married and things could have fallen apart after the marriage, which is a lot more difficult. Instead, now I have no clue what's going to happen. I know I've got a great job. I love working here at Focus. Great people around me, good friends, great family. And because of that, I can walk through life blindly, and God's teaching me to walk through life blindly because I have no clue. I have no idea what's going to happen.
I think there is kind of a sense of, I had this plan, I had this idea, I had this direction, and then it's like a canyon opens up like the cheesy movies. You know, you're driving along and all of a sudden there's this abyss and you're going, wow, I absolutely have no idea what anything looks like all of a sudden. Just, you know, within a month, you go from about to change your name and all these things to literally, like, it's just this really, it's a sense of grief, a sense of emptiness, a sense of just kind of like the wind was knocked out of you. And you really don't know. You're just staring kind of off into nothingness. Probably the best thing I did for myself is we actually made it through one premarital counseling session before everything went awry, or, you know, we were kind of on the brink when we went there. It's funny. I think the counselor expects this, you know, starstruck couple to walk into his office and be like, oh yes, everything, you know, we're so in love. And we were just kind of looking at each other and looking at him like, wow, we are completely lost right now. Anyway, that was a really good step for us, was to even process that with him. But the best thing I did for myself was to keep going. He had moved back to Indiana, and I thought to myself, I had something to do with this, and I want to figure out what it was, and I don't want it to happen again. I want to figure out what I did and what went wrong. And so I actually just kept going to that same counselor for a while, and that was really insightful. It actually helped me to examine not only this relationship, but who I was, what, you know, what had gone on both in my life and who I wanted to become, what kind of man I did want to have in my future. And that was really crucial, actually, to the change for me, and led to later on, I actually just got married this last year.
Yay.
So be hopeful, you know, 6 years after that all happened. So again, much later, you know, at 30 and not at 22 or 23 or all those things you think are going to be perfect and you've hoped for. But we actually then did pre-engagement counseling, which I'm like the biggest cheerleader now in all of life for, simply because you don't have this wedding looming over you, and you can literally look at each other in your relationship in such an honest, open, clear light. You put everything out on the table in the right and healthy way with someone to walk you through it. So by the time you get engaged, especially for me, because I'd done this before and I was like, I am not going there again. You know, you have, when Nate proposed to me, it was like, yes and yes. You know, I know who you are. I know you're trustworthy. You know me. We didn't have an easy pre-engagement. There was stuff in our lives that was rough, but the best thing that our counselor said to us that I will just carry with me forever, he said, I will help you become engaged in a healthy way or exit gracefully. And wow, what a graceful exit. I mean, that's what we didn't have. That's what I didn't have. But what a beautiful picture of saying, this can be done. It can be done well. There is a different way. Yeah. You know, there's a different way to do this. And I really needed to know that.
Yeah. So Charity, were you just like, I mean, honestly, you must have been like, can I even bring a relationship to completion? I mean, let's be honest here.
Yeah. And at the second time, the first time I felt a lot of that humiliation and shame, the second time, that was the biggest issue for me, because I was, again, I had wanted my dream because I read all those courtship books, and I come from a broken family. My parents did not have a good relationship. They got divorced when I was a teenager, and it was heartbreaking to watch that growing up. There was a lot of fighting and yelling and all of those things in my family growing up. So I'm not kidding. By the time I was 16, I was reading marriage books. I was reading dating books. I was reading everything that I could get my hands on so that I would know what I was doing when I was finally in a relationship. And I had prayed these massive prayers to God. God, I only want to fall in love with one man, and I want him to be my husband. And, you know, I had all these dreams for my life, and being single in my 30s was definitely not one of them. But again, the second time that I was engaged and it fell apart, I was, you know, I was in a place of, God, you've completely redeemed the past. And, you know, mm-hmm. it had changed my relationship with God, this, you know, the second relationship. And, you know, I see all the benefit from the first. And so I definitely had to wrestle with God in a lot of that. The humiliation, the shame. Again, both times I was in a position of leadership, so mm-hmm. I was afraid of what are people thinking about me when they're looking at what's happening in my life and mm-hmm. feeling like they're looking at there's something wrong with me or mm-hmm. All of those emotions that come with it. But then there was also that sense of relief, too, mm-hmm. that I also knew in the bottom of my heart that God had protected me from walking mm-hmm. into marriage that would have not been his best for my life. Yeah. And since that point in time, again, it does take a while to pick up the pieces. Mm-hmm. It really is an abyss. You really just wake up and you don't know what to do with your life the next day. You go from couple land to being single again, and you don't really know how to do it. And again, I had school the second time I was working on my master's, so I had something immediately to pour my life into. Mm-hmm. But you really just don't know what you're going to do. And I've learned since then to really hold my plans and my dreams loosely mm-hmm. and let God do whatever he... I mean, I've really learned submission to God's plan for my life because I really don't know where he's taking me from here. And I've learned that it's okay. I've learned that he's going to take care of me. Mm-hmm. And even when it hurts and even when everything falls apart, I did find him there. Mm-hmm. And that has been one of the biggest things that I feel like I've been able to bring to some of my clients. I primarily work with trauma. So it's one of the biggest things that I feel like I've been able to bring to my clients is even in the worst of all circumstances, when your dreams fall apart, that God is there and he is doing something and he does have a purpose and a reason mm-hmm. that he's going to use everything for his ultimate good and purpose for your life. So,
yeah, I think that's really encouraging. I mean, it definitely in seeing that. Yeah.
Well, just I mean, I just wanted to say that I have not gotten to that point yet. We broke up in October last year. Mm-hmm. And I'm not there yet. There are days like 4th of July, for example, I was all by myself. I watched some movies on Netflix, and I'm not at the point where I completely trust God because I want things to happen, and I try to make things happen, and I've joined dating sites, and I've unjoined dating sites now just because
Welcome to that club, Kevin. Welcome to that club.
I realized that, you know, I do need to trust in God, but I don't, you know, and I was realizing that the reason I was on these sites is, you know, oh, well, God's not going to bring anybody my way. So let's, you know, I go to Google for everything else. So why not, you know, search on the internet for the answers? And it didn't work. I mean, I didn't like anybody I went out on dates with, and I wasn't trusting God. It was more internally, I didn't have that faith that I needed to have, and I still don't. You know, I still am unsure about the future, and I still don't, I'm not completely ready yet. And maybe that's why God hasn't brought someone along.
So. Well, I appreciate you saying that. And I think it's important, Kevin, you know, you bring up a good point, and that is, it's almost empowering to understand that, you know, we're not just completely, it's, you know, anyone out there in the world could easily say, oh, it's just fate or it's just karma or it's just whatever. But God gives us a very real role in our relationships. And I think, Lindy, it was greatly encouraging to see how you took ownership of the situation. And you said, and I know when you were talking to us beforehand, you talked about how just that whole when you realized that I do not have to marry this guy. Mm-hmm. I don't have to. This doesn't have to, you know, and you had that opportunity to step back and reflect on where you were and realize that. And Kevin, it just so happens that in your situation, it was her that made that decision. But right. Now in looking at that, you're probably realizing, wow, okay, fresh eyes, looking back on that situation, realizing the things that escalated and how rapidly things mm-hmm. went. You know, you can see that even though it's no less hurtful or it's no less kind of putting you at sea as to what happens from here. But I think it's great. And still, you know, it doesn't mean that the boundless, I always have to, you know, come back to what boundless says. You know, there's no less hope for you on your part of going out and searching and finding a wife and the fact that there is someone there for you and your role in that process and stuff. And ladies, you know, you know, especially Charity, you and I as well. And obviously looking at Lindy's story and realizing that, you know, going about it the second time, you know, just night and day as far as the outcome of that. I think that's huge. And I think we did talk a little bit during the course of this, and I think it's great that we all hit on this, the idea of when you're in that relationship, there's a time to just give it more time, and there's a time to talk, mm-hmm. and there's a time to communicate, and there is a time to break it off and to realize, you know, and you talked about what some of those red flags were and the fact that we do, you know, Kevin, like you said, we try to fit a person or a situation into what we feel is right or what we feel God wants from us, and understanding that spiritual maturity on some level is important, and what does it look like for that person to have, you know, trajectory and to be growing and stuff, and when is it like, no, I'm putting that upon them myself. And like you said, the distance thing is huge. So, well, I am hoping we're going to go ahead and wrap up here, but I'm hoping that we'll be able to follow up with y'all in the future. You know, Lindy is in the married world now and growing in that, which is exciting. And to recognize that, you know, sure, there's a story there in the past, but that doesn't affect it. Probably only enhances and only gives a sense of grace and really a sense of understanding of where you are now. And there is still hope in the midst of brokenness, I think, for all of us as well. So I just want to thank you all for being part of this discussion and being so transparent and sharing your stories. I really appreciate that. So thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, it was fun.
We love you. Sing, we love Jesus. We need you. All of my sin that's clouding my mind, you're breaking it down. Yes, you're breaking it down. And all of the lies that echo my past, you're breaking them down. You are awakening me, Lord. You are awakening me, Lord. We love you. Sing, we love Jesus. We need you. Sing, we need Jesus.
For this week's culture segment, we are very excited to have in studio with us Lisa Veldhaus. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Lisa, well, and I had to bring Martha back in the studio too. Martha, good to have you here.
Yes, I'm a bit of a fan of Lisa's.
Yes. Well, and that's good because they're going to have a little connection here that we'll tell you about in a second. But want you to know that Lisa also wrote a book called Craving Grace that we're going to be talking about here today. And because her now husband is maybe involved in this story a little bit as well, I just nabbed him too. And I said, hey, come on
in. Glad to be here in the morning too.
Nathan, great to have you here at the table. So very fun. You two are in the process of moving. You are actually literally in transit across the country to, where are you going?
To Oceanside, California.
Okay.
I'll let you tell more, honey.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I'm active duty Marine officer. I spent the last year in Quantico, and we're doing our pretty much every couple of year move cross country. So we're in Quantico for last year and moving to Southern California, San Diego area.
Okay.
So
Virginia to the West Coast.
Yeah.
And we can't wait for the sunshine.
So that, yes. hopefully you will get some when you make it there. That is very good. Well, and of course we have to give Nathan props because he is a boundless listener and reader, has had some history with Boundless, so very excited about that. Yeah. Anyone who ever, you know, has anything positive to say about Boundless, we make you just give positive endorsements or whatever.
Well, it's a delight to be here this morning.
Very fun. All right, now Martha, I'll go ahead and let you make the connection with Lisa in your former life. So go ahead and do that.
Yes. Well, back in 2000, Lisa and I were both high school seniors.
It's true.
And we both entered a contest to be the 2000 Brio girl.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Ah, it's true. She won. I didn't.
Oh, my word. But do you need some tissues? We can go.
It makes for a good story. But what's cool is later on, I joined the staff of Brio and got to be a part of the picking process for future Brio girls. So
that's
it worked out in the end.
So do you think, looking back on it, did Lisa actually have the qualifications, or should you have gotten it?
Oh, my.
Oh, we won't go there.
Well, so that's good that now it's kind of come full circle, and here she is back in the studio.
I guess so.
Yeah.
We get the chance to interview her. Okay, so this is going to be fun because this book is, like, weird. I mean that in a good way. It is, like, wacky and wild. Like, from the time that I even just read the back cover, I was like, what? Where is she going to go with this? This is all crazy. It's, like, fasting, and it's relationships, and it's non-relationships, and it's a
true
former book that was read. And it's just, like, this crazy, crazy memoir, which is kind of funny because you're young.
I know.
But you've already had plenty to talk about.
Well, actually, one of the first things that my husband said when he heard I was writing a memoir was, are you kidding me? You're only 28 years old.
You were 27 at the time, honey.
Okay, well, that makes even worse. But yeah, it's a memoir about a 6-month period in my life when I fasted from sweets to try to learn that God could be sweet. And then it's about the 3 or so years that followed and how life changed as a result of the fast.
Yeah, very, very true. And there was just a lot of, in fact, as I was even telling Martha this on the front end, I was like, I can hardly even keep up going through this book with the many, many very intentional and very almost like unbelievable things that you did in this process. I mean, to, you know, who picks this kind of thing and who plants themselves in this situation and who has this kind of relationship? And so it was really fascinating. And
Well, thank you.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was great. And actually the subtitle for it is A Story of Faith, Failure, and My Search for Sweetness, which I think plays out in a number of different ways throughout the book. But the one thing I want you to just kind of start out by talking about, Lisa, is how you open the book. And you open with a scenario of being at post your sister's wedding.
Uh-huh.
And really it's a pivotal point between kind of who your former self was and this break that you made into this new experiential realization of, oh my goodness, I have just made a decision, a life decision, and what is this going to mean for me this point forward?
Sure. Well, it's kind of an awkward place to start a book, I'll admit that, because the story has to do with my first and second kisses. We talked a little bit with Martha about my history with Brio, but I have an additional history, and that is I wrote a book called Saving My First Kiss when I was in my late teens and early 20s. And did a lot of things related to that book, speaking and traveling around the country and writing. And it became a little bit of a, more than a little bit. It became the foundation for my career and some ministry opportunities. And everybody knew I was this person who wrote this book. And then I was vowing to save my first kiss until I was engaged. And I'll let you read the book for more as to why. But to make a long story short, I broke that vow in a way I would have never expected. And that kind of came on the tail end of this 6-month fast from sweets. And during that 6 months, I had been learning that I wasn't the good and faithful person that I had always thought I was. And so the first kiss was sort of a culmination of all of that, where I finally had to accept that I'm not a good person. I'm at my very basic level, I'm a sinner. And even the things that I try to do faithfully for the Lord, I can't do them perfectly. So the first kiss kind of is the story that starts it all out. And then I go backward from there and tell you everything that that led up to it.
Yeah. And actually, you you refer to, and this is where I think it's so funny. I mean, just to even be as young as you were at the time and to have this completely mapped out story for how this was all going to go down and how you were going to, you know, come hell or high water, you were going to grow in Christ. And you were, you know. And,
yeah.
So you basically embarked on, and this is part of the backup situation, what you called the Honey Project.
Yeah.
Which really was birthed out of some great intention and some great biblical teaching. So tell us a little bit about how that came about.
Sure. Well, I had heard one of my favorite Bible teachers speak about how God is sweet like honey. And this is a verse that I knew, and there are several verses in the Bible that allude to that. There's one that says, taste and see that the Lord is good. And when I heard this particular teaching, I was in the middle of the most disillusioned season that I've ever had. And I'd been faithful, or so I thought, for a really long time, and was kind of known as a role model in Christian circles. And I was not happy. And I blamed God for it and thought, here, I've been so faithful and I've tried to be good, and you have not given me the sort of life I wanted, not even close. And where is the blessing in all of this? So to hear that God was sweet like honey just did not compute for me. And I didn't like that. That didn't sit well with me, because I love the Lord and I'd been a part of his church all my life. And so I wanted to be able to believe that he was sweet like honey. So I was really at a point of desperation after all of that, and decided to fast from sweets to get a new understanding of sweetness, and maybe through that know God better and know that he could be sweet. But to be honest, I didn't expect anything to happen. I just thought, oh, I'll be disciplined and that will be good. And that's what Christians do. We're obedient. And through the obedience, I'll learn more about God. And that was not what happened at all. God showed up in amazing ways. And it was almost as if he put me in front of myself and said, you do not have to be this person that you've tried to be for so long, always obedient, always good, really earning standing with him. And he showed me that he had earned my standing with him, and that was enough and more than enough. So that's the basic story.
Yeah. Well, I think it was interesting how you drive back then to that that moment of the kisses. And, you know, you'd been doing well with the sweets, you know, and it was it was like, never did you think that you'd be kind of blindsided maybe by the circumstances at your sister's wedding. And I like how you say in the book, you say, two Mizla kisses, they uncovered that I was incapable of earning my way religiously, that I couldn't achieve or even want goodness, that my heart at its core was sinister and dark and confused.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not, it was more where your heart was at the time. It's not that, oh my goodness, I just made this irretrievable mistake that for, you know, will now completely define me and there's no redemption in this and there's no whatever. But like you were kind of insinuating there, it uncovered maybe your heart at its core.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it was so little of it was about kissing. It was about, I had always set up my life to not fail, and everything was spiritual, and everything that I did was trying to please God. And I think I lived that way because I didn't understand that I already had his pleasure, and that in Christ I had standing with God. And so to fail this vow that I had made, it really wasn't all that much about kissing. It was just about failing. And for me, that was a big failure. And it was the first time that I had had to acknowledge that I can't do it on my own. I can't be good enough, no matter how hard I try.
Why do you think we have that tendency of having the standard and I can't make a mistake and I have to be perfect? And where did that come from for you?
Well, I think it's because I didn't understand what God's love is, that he loves me, and that is his, it all stems from his goodness, from his character. It has nothing to do with mine. My character can be a response to his love, but my character can't bring it on. He just loves me, and he has given all of himself for me. And when I came to understand that, really, I came to understand it because I had come to the end of myself. I saw that my ability wasn't enough. I wasn't as capable or as spiritual as I had always thought. And then all I had left were the promises that I had known since what seemed like forever from the Bible, that God is love, that we can't earn our place with him, that we don't need to try. And that was incredible good news for someone who had been in the church for a long time and supposedly knew the gospel. I met it face to face after a long time of trying to get there on my own, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting how, you know, throughout the book, it's evident that you don't really do anything halfway. I mean, it was like every situation was like, okay, I mean, you became part of this farm.
It's true.
I mean, it was like first you were kind of, you know, a little bit reconciled to the fact that you were living in a small town, but maybe you weren't quite satisfied with that because should you have more? And but you yeah. still had good relationships and you still had this great job and were fulfilled in that. But then, you know, then came the farm and then came this whole experience of the relationships through that and the dating and the online stuff.
Oh my goodness.
And I mean, what was going through your head through these experiences? Because we kind of, even though we know that we're supposed to trust God and he's sovereign, we still are living life on this timeline of expecting certain things to happen at certain yeah. times. And so how did you reconcile all of that?
Well, I think it was a little easy because I had no expectations. Mm-hmm. And I'll say that my life in real life is not as exciting as this book might make it seem. I mean, those 6 months and then the immediate time following, I felt like God just poured things on and poured like honey. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because I'm just really thick-skulled and he needed to pound it into me that this is not an accident. These things are happening because I'm choosing to speak to you right now. And so I just kind of tried to roll with it as best as I could and learned a lot in the process and was humbled a lot in the process. And you'll read that in the book over and over, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it is. I mean, it's just so funnily written. I mean, as I was reading it, I was like, oh, my word, this is like I have lived this. There are some elements here that I have
true.
Lived. And it feels very, especially for the women out there, I think they will very much resonate with what you have to say. So I want to fast forward then and talk about the portion of the book where you come to this realization, and it's through experientially through food mm-hmm. where you start realizing some of your cravings changing.
Yeah.
And then you draw that in parallel to ultimately your cravings for God and your experience of God. And how, just talk a little bit about how that process unfolded and how really that was transformational for you.
Sure. Well, I talk in the book about what I call a cheap, sweet counterfeit. And I think that's true. That was true of me, of my taste physically. And it was also true of my taste spiritually, that I have always been a sweet tooth and became quite committed to chocolate and dessert and all things decadent. And then when I fasted from sweets, I only allowed myself fruit and fruit juice and honey for sweets. And it was terrible. And I thought that I would do okay, but it took 2 months for me to even start successfully. I kept failing and failing. And then even when I did manage to hold on for 6 months without sweets, it was really, really difficult. And that started keying me into the idea that maybe I'm not as strong as I thought, because here I can't get even my body to be in line with what my head and heart want. So that was sort of the physical line of the book. But then the spiritual parallel is that I know I should want God, that true sweetness, like the honey, the fruit juice. I know that I should want him. But what I'm finding is that in so many areas of my life, I satisfy my cravings with things that are the cheap counterfeit, like wanting approval, wanting a successful career, wanting a relationship. And it's not bad to want any of those things, but when they become the ultimate thing, then everything is off. And then the taste is leading us in the wrong direction. So
yeah.
I guess I learned to recalibrate
Yeah.
And God showed me what real sweetness is, and that's him.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's interesting because really with the books you've written, I mean, the two books are very different stories of who you are, very different pictures. And, you know, I think the overarching theme, which obviously is coming through in this book, is that of grace and that of recognizing really what grace can do. And just one other portion of the book that I want to read quickly is where you finish off one of the final chapters by saying, "This is the scandal of grace. The jolt that comes afterward is not from the heaviness of remorse, but from a new tender lightness. I was learning how to be less and infinitely lower than I'd always expected and thought I was. I was beginning to see what it means to be drawn to God, not committed out of mere duty, not faithful simply because it might cajole him into favor, but attracted to him and won over by the reckless extent of his love," which is a huge paradigm shift from I'm going to do X, Y, Z, and this is going to catapult me into some level of, you know, spiritual fervor or something along those lines.
Yeah. And I think that for me, the most surprising thing and the most beautiful thing in my journey thus far and the journey of this book, Craving Grace, is to see the freedom that we have in Christ. I didn't have freedom in Christ until I discovered grace, until he showed me his grace, because it was so much about rules and so much about obedience. And there's nothing wrong with those things, but they should come out of joy. And when they come out of joy, there is this sense of lightness. Mm-hmm. It's not a burden. It's a delight to follow. And that's been an incredible and really fun shifts to be able to make.
Yeah. All right. Well, Nathan, you have to jump in here because you have now become you've become part of this story. And so much of what Lisa, you know, has learned on the front end and not only walked with the Lord in, but just, you know, grappled with and stuff was part of her story as a single woman. But now as a married couple, you have the opportunity to apply and flesh this out further. I mean, did you meet her and say, "Can I even take this on?" I don't know. I mean, what did that look like when you saw kind of some of her story unfold?
That's a great question, because actually, when I met her, she was still in the process of writing the book. Mm-hmm. You were in the process actually of finishing proposals and looking to see what would happen in your future. Actually, the first, maybe real quickly, how we met was pretty, maybe not standard. She met the church. She went to visit family members who went to the same church. And because it was a long-distance relationship and I was deploying very soon, almost the vast majority of our time had been long-distance and email and phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
And so we talked a lot by email and conversation about how God worked in our life, how grace had been an impact. And I guess there's something you said when you're reading it in emails as opposed to seeing it in person. So I almost like got to know her through emails in the first place. It's almost like reading a book email by email through the whole process.
Mm-hmm.
It was really neat to see early on how much God had worked in her life, how he had taught her about grace. And that was one of the things that really attracted me to her early on. It was maybe like a week into the relationship or so.
We moved fast.
Very quickly.
Over email.
So it was always neat and interesting to see how God had worked in her life, and also to kind of be a part of encouraging her from a distance. And it's very different, I guess, because it was long distance to begin with, seeing encouraging her from a distance than being married, always seeing each other and day by day trying to encourage and deal with each other's lives. And also realizing we're not as perfect as we would like to think we are. mm-hmm. It's amazing how marriage does that constantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's big.
Yeah, marriage has been an interesting picture of grace. And, you know, I was single, like completely single until 28 and then married at 29. And so I'd lived the single life for a while, and it annoyed me when people compared Christianity to marriage because they were always married when they did that. And I thought, come on, like, it's really not that close. And it's certainly not a dead ringer for God's grace. But yeah, having somebody see you at your ugliest all the time and put up with you, and not only that, but love you and encourage you and serve you. It kind of forces something to click, and you think, this is what love is. It's not this, you know, that initial crazy attraction or, you know, that's certainly part of it. But the seasoned love is when you can serve someone else and you can allow yourself to be served by someone else mm-hmm. and let them really see the worst of you and the best of you.
And also to realize yourself how sinful you are. I think one of the most striking things about marriage, you realize I'm balanced all the time, but realize how selfish and self-centered you are until you've got somebody else who's you're living with. And I'm told kids is part two, sanctification, and teenagers part three and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But just being married and constantly realizing that I want to think about myself more than I want to think about my wife. Mm-hmm. It is convicting, and it's a draw to repentance constantly.
Mm-hmm. Was there anything, Nathan, that you had read or learned from Boundless that helped you apply that towards your relationships with her, both being long distance initially and then saying, okay, this is something that I think really we can make work?
Definitely a long distance. I know I'm trying to recall back to two, three years ago that was happening. I know Boundless has had a number of articles, and I wish I was familiar enough to quote the articles on the date, but a number of articles about long distance relationships and ways to do that. And I definitely think also that the courtship model, or however the Boundless writes a lot about involving parents and just mm-hmm. wise ways about pursuing a relationship, definitely was very influential in how we've tried to pursue the relationship as well. I balanced parts a lot about relationships, and at that time in my life, it was very helpful for kind of forming how I think and thinking through a biblical way of how do we pursue a relationship in a godly way.
Yeah. Yeah, Lisa, you better be appreciative of that, because you could still be dating.
Thank you, Boundless.
Be like, it is now 7 years into our relationship, and we are still doing pizza on Friday nights. So yeah, we discourage that as much as possible. Yeah. But
good to hear the good testimonies.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And to see that, you know, you make that commitment. And like you said, I mean, you're now moving across country. I mean, there are different things. Life will change. Schedules will change. Things, you know, your circumstances will change and stuff. But there's just a great deal to apply of grace in that situation as it plays out.
I mean,
that's big.
And certainly, you know, marriage isn't the only place where you learn this. I talk in the book about how you mentioned the farm, how I became part of really a small community of people. It sounds like a commune, but that's not what it was. People who decided to care about each other and live in the same general area. And we learned a lot more about each other than I think we would have ever thought we would have learned. And we saw the good, the bad, and the ugly. And that, too, was such a lesson in loving others and learning to be loved and showing the bad to others. I think so often we're afraid to let people see our own sin. And when we do, it's an opportunity for grace to hit us once again. And that's just an incredible thing every time.
Mm-hmm. Lisa, for someone who's listening and might be thinking, wow, I want to learn that. Like, it sounds like her life has really changed through that. What would your advice be to start that journey?
Well, really, the best advice that I can give is to ask the Lord to prove His grace and His sweetness to you. That's really all I did. And I fasted, but, you know, as I said, not very well. And it was God's showing up in my life that made the story. There wouldn't be a story had He not proved Himself to me in the ways that He did over and over and over. There are so many stories in the book where I found that I was full of sin, and He was still right there in the middle of it, showing Himself to me and loving me. And He can do that with anybody. You just have to be open to it and looking for it. And as He opens our hearts, we can see Him more clearly, I think.
Well, I just think it's a cool story, and one that is born out of a lot of where many Boundless listeners are right now, especially the women, you know, just wondering, what is God's purpose in this for me? And feeling very frantic in, should I do this? Should I do this? What does this look like? And, you know, we're all under a burden of task and legalism and expectation and duty and stuff like that. And to really recognize and learn from your experience and realize, you know, what God brought to you in the midst of that, and that he is very willing to show himself to those that ask. And I think that's big, both for you as a woman in your single years, and now that you two are married. I think it's huge.
Phase one was the book, and now we're living phase two, I think.
There you go. Well, maybe there will be another book out of that one at some point.
We'll see
how that plays out. Well, again, the book is Craving Grace, A Story of Faith Failure and My Search for Sweetness. The author is Lisa Velthaus. Find out more about Lisa at Lisa Velthaus, that's VELTHaus.com. She's blogging.
That's
right.
She's
got some thoughts that she's sharing as the book has released now, and just moving into this new phase of life, so you can keep up with her there. And Nathan, thanks so much for being part of the conversation as well, and thank you for serving our country, and all the best to you both as you move into this next chapter. That's exciting. So hopefully we'll see you.
Well, thank you very much.
If there's another cross-country trip, you'll come by on the
we'll stop by.
The backside and stop by, and maybe we'll have sunnier weather for you.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you.
Every day, you were working on my heart.
Well, hey, everyone. We are opening up this week's inbox, and I have Candace on the phone. Hey, Candace.
Lisa, it's great to be with you, as always.
Woohoo! So, are you enjoying your summer so far?
We are having a great summer. Looking forward to a week of VBS and some travels to North Carolina for Steve's grandma's 90th birthday.
Aw. Well, wish her happy birthday from us at Boundless.
I will.
She'll be like, hey, I think I know what that is, so...
Well, it's her life, 90 years.
I know. That's amazing. So that's exciting. Well, we've got a great question for you this week. Of course, it's a question written about a guy, but by his girlfriend.
Yes, we have no shortage of these.
Keep them coming. She's doing him a favor here by getting some advice for him. I can't wait to see how she's going to give this advice to him. This is going to be good. So maybe you'll have to just share some stuff for her, too. So.
Okay, bring it on.
Okay, she says, how can I get my boyfriend to get a mentor? He doesn't really have any friends, none that he can talk to about our relationship and life. He doesn't talk to his family because they are biased. Plus, I've told him that I don't want them knowing every little thing we go through. We've been having a hard time with different issues for a while now, and we have no one to talk to. I have my girlfriends, but he doesn't talk to anyone. I can only say so much, and then I've annoyed him or turned him off the issue altogether, and that's why I'm trying to encourage him to find someone to talk to. The problem is that he thinks he doesn't need anyone's help. Would it be wrong for me to ask someone that I know he could trust to check up on him often, ask them to step in and kind of help us out? Or should I just back off altogether and wait on God and trust that my boyfriend will see he needs someone to talk to other than me?
Oh my goodness. Where to begin? I think she does need to back off. Definitely back off the nagging of you need this, you need that, do this, do that. If he is not doing what she perceived to be an essential part of a healthy relationship, she needs to consider backing off the relationship and just letting him know kindly, hey, I want this to go forward. I enjoy our friendship. I enjoy our relationship. I hope this has potential to go the distance. And in order to do that, I really am convinced of the need for mentoring. I think that's a vital part of our relationship. And that's what I would, you know, would like to do. And then leave it at that and see what he does. And if he is not interested, then she needs to be willing to walk away, because I think it is essential. And a man who's not willing to get input from other Christian men is either hiding something or just isn't mature enough to move into marriage. Because good marriages don't happen in isolation. They really do need input from other believers. At a minimum, they need to be members of a church together, you know, going to church together, getting the input of a pastor, ideally, preferably a small group in addition to that. And so... But the way she's going about this is the problem. You know, the desired goal is not a problem. Mentoring is a great thing, and certainly we've, you know, sung the praises of mentoring week after week on the Boundless Show. But the way she's trying to do it is, I think, a symptom of an unhealthy relationship, because she's nagging him.
Yeah.
She's wanting us to give her a pass on being manipulative, and I'm not willing to do that.
Right. And it is kind of hard to tell from the question, you know, she says, you know, he thinks he doesn't need anyone else's help. Well, is he just kind of brushing her off because she's nagging a lot, or is he out and out saying, you know, I don't need any help, I'm doing just fine? You know, you kind of,
right.
You can't tell. I'm a little concerned with her saying, you know, that they've been having a bunch of different
yeah.
issues crop up. And then she says that she's talking to her girlfriends. Well,
right.
I would maybe tell her to avail herself of maybe some more mature Christian women, because the girlfriend situation can just be a little, you know, gossip and vent fest.
Exactly.
So
and, you know, Lisa,
have to guard against
one
that.
Thing that could come out of, if she were to do that and go about this in a more mature biblical way, she would seek out an older woman. The older woman would listen to her, hopefully pray with her, and then the older woman would ideally, and probably if it were me, invite them over for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then it has not been manipulative. It has been initiated by an older woman, and the older woman has an opportunity to hopefully her husband is there too.
Mm-hmm.
They can speak into their life, and then it hasn't been manipulative. It has been healthy and above board, and if he resists that, she has the information she needs to know, okay, this probably isn't a healthy relationship and it shouldn't move forward.
Right. And then she's brought in some objective, you know, ears as well that can go back to her and say, yeah, here's what we see in him and this is what we, you know, would advise and stuff.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. She's so convinced he needs a mentor, but she doesn't say she has one.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so it is always easier to see somebody else's sins or flaws or whatever you want to call whatever's going on. It's easy to see the speck in his eye and miss the log in your own eye.
Right. That's true. Well, it looks like there's a lot of different things that could be done here. So hopefully she is listening and we'll get started on this.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And, you know, I will say there have been people who've written in who are not having repeated problems, and they're kind of new to this concept of mentoring, and the girlfriend says, hey, I read this really great article about mentoring on Boundless. I'll send it to you. And he goes, oh, great, I'll read it. And they read it, and then they talk about it, and they go, yeah, we probably need mentoring. I mean, that's mm-hmm. evidence of a healthy relationship, where there is
right.
the conversation, there's give and take, and they go, oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Let's do that.
Right. And even
but I'm not sure that she's describing that.
Right. And too immediately, I mean, it just shows maturity on anyone's part to be able to step back at a suggestion and say, whether or not you agree with it immediately or not, to say, wow, you know, I really will consider that. Or because, you know, you think this is important, I think that's great
right.
that you suggested it. And not immediately
yeah.
be defensive and say, well, what do you think's wrong with me? What do I need? So
exactly.
A lot to be learned
yeah.
from that. So. Well, Candace, thank you so much for giving some great advice here. I think there are a number of different things that could be done in this situation. So hopefully she will listen and just exactly as you said, bring someone else into the picture who can speak objectively and really give some good counsel and kind of survey the situation from all sides. So hopefully that will be done. Well, everyone, that is it for this week's show. Great to have you with us again this week. Write to us at editor@boundless.org. If you have a question that we can address on a future show, we want to make sure that we get to that. And or if you have any comments on questions that have been answered, including this one, or have a situation maybe that plays into that or that could illustrate kind of what we talked about here, we would love to hear about that as well. You should be on the lookout now for our Boundless Summer Challenge, the second annual one, which has just launched. So hopefully you have joined us in that and are getting the scoop each day as we give you something to look forward to really maximize your summer and make it something that you can do intentionally and do well and learn a few new things. So we want you to be a part of that journey with us. So you can get more information on our site at boundless.org. Have a great week, everyone. I'm Lisa Anderson for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.